through the love ends.
Good evening, good morning, good afternoon, wherever you are in the world. Welcome back to another episode, episode number 5, in fact, of the Reconnect with Your Teenager podcast with yours truly, Emma G. If you are new to the space, well, I'm so thrilled that you're here. It probably is because you're either a teenager or the parent of a teenager, or you work with young people between the ages of 13 and 17. Myself, I am perpetually 17 years old. No, not really. But my name is Emma G, and I am a youth empowerment through songwriting coach and author of the book Reconnect with Your Teenager, because it is my belief that when we are working together to empower this next generation, we really can build the world for a better future, a brighter future, and a more, you know, successful, healed world, especially after the pandemic. But of course, using music, which is my superpower, to empower young people is a little unconventional. So I thought to myself, why not reach out to other unconventional youth workers to talk to them about what they do, how they empower the next generation, and what they're doing to make the world a better place. Today, I am joined by, well, all the way from near Ventura, California, George V. Gonzalez. How are you today, George?
I'm doing great. Thank you so much for having me. Super excited to be here today.
I'm excited that you're here too. And I love that you are in sunny California while it is currently about 2 degrees Celsius here in Washington, D.C. For the American folks listening to this right now, that's about 37 degrees, and I'm not happy about it. But I mean, it is winter. It is Christmas time. So tell me about, like, what is life in California like for you?
Well, I've been here my entire life. I'm spoiled, you know, just be honest. You know, my weather here in Oxnard, California, near Ventura, is 65 degrees, 65 to 67 degrees year round for the most part. So pretty much sunny all the time. When it gets a little colder or hotter, we kind of panic because we're so spoiled, but it's amazing. I love living here.
It's something that I get very, I don't know, like for me, because I grew up in New Zealand and Fiji, right? Where my father was from Fiji. But, you know, for me, I've always felt as if our moods and our mental states are often quite closely linked to the weather patterns and the amount of sunshine that we get into our lives. And so it's fascinating to me when you find people in places like California, which, you know, the sunny state, that specifically work in the field of youth development, youth empowerment, and mental health. Coming from such a warm climate, how have you found that, what do you think are like some of the root causes of some of the struggles that people generally are faced with because of the lessened risk of weather playing a factor?
Well, I think being outside is nurturing, first of all, by Mother Nature. You have to be outside. You have to be around bodies of water, green grass, fresh grass, and you have to be exposed to the sun. If it's cloudy, I'm in a bad mood if it's cloudy. So I've been here like this my entire life, and I see other kids like really grouchy when it's cloudy. Because why? Because we need the sun. We need to be outdoors. We need to be in the swing set, in the grass, in the dirt. We need that as children and as adults as well. So yeah, definitely. Outside is impactful, definitely.
I love that. So I want to talk a little bit about what your superpowers are, because you're a first generation American, originally from Mexico, which I love. I technically guess I'm not first generation. I'm a transplant. So, but my mother is from America. She's from Pennsylvania. So, you know, I'll claim that. But, you know, as somebody who, you know, was born and raised in California, you have been through some pretty adverse experiences, shall we say, which led you, I think, to your calling as a coach, but also as an author. And I love that, you know, in your bio, you talk about, you know, if people are struggling to find a new direction in life, especially after facing tragedy, or are wondering how to reinvent themselves and pursue their dreams, I'm guessing also in the face of challenges, you know, you're the person to talk to. And I love that, because as somebody who's also been through a lot of adverse experiences with 10 brain surgeries and so on and so forth. I think it's really easy for people to look at people like us, think they have it all together. Why should I go to them for coaching? Can you tell me a little bit about how you came to be a coach and your own sort of struggles, if you will, you know, that you've turned into your own type of blessing?
You know, when I was young, I always had young people come to me for guidance.
Right.
You know, I've always had like this little chip in my shoulder as a little kid, you know, so I would go through some stuff. Growing up here, United States, first generation, my family was from Mexico. The culture was different. So I had to learn a culture that my parents weren't familiar with.
Mm.
So I was raised with Mexican values, but at the same time, I was between two sides of an American culture. So I was exposed to certain things. And because I was a little older, some of the young kids would come to me. So I've been always like giving my wisdom to like the younger guys, the younger girls. I was always doing that. And also with my siblings, because I'm the third oldest of my family. But it's almost like if I'm the oldest, because they come to me for like, what do you think? I mean, I need this. I mean, well, how would you handle it? So I've always had that. And with my life experiences on all the things that I've overcame. And when I wrote the book, it really just opened some doors for me and escalated.
Mm.
So because now people are like, oh my God, I never knew that you went through this.
Mm.
And now they know that they can trust me by coming to me and say, George, I'm going through this. How did you handle that? I know you talked about your book and I see it on your content, but how can I help myself?
Mm.
And then I'm able to get into those conversations with them.
Let's pause that for 1 second, because you mentioned your book. You have a number one best-selling book called Answer the Call, Life Lessons from Family Origins Through Invention and Struggle. Tell us, you know, for those who haven't read the book yet, what was the inspiration of the book? What is the book about?
Answer the Call is about finding your gifts, your talents, and following your life's purpose. That's what Answer the Call means.
I love that.
25 years ago, I took my father to USC University in California to a liver specialist. The liver specialist told me, I need you to tell your dad that he has 6 months to live because his liver is so burned out.
Oh, Jesus.
And I turned and I told my dad, I go, Dad, this is what the doctor wants me to tell you. And my father didn't say anything. He got up and he walked out. Mexican man, macho, strong man, didn't say a word. As I'm walking to the car with my younger sister, my dad, I was like, this story has to be told. The consequences of substance abuse, this story has to be told. And the story of what a family is going to have to endure as a sacrifice is collateral damage. This also has to be told. But for 25 years, no opportunity really presented itself for me to share that story until I wrote the book. And I talk about that in the book. So that's what inspired me to write the book.
And that's a really important message for everybody of all ages, right? But, you know, I think the reason why this resonates so much with me, I was a teenager when somebody who sort of acted as a step-in father for me as, you know, as a young person passed away from substance abuse as well. And I think that's a really difficult subject to broach with our young people, not just about loss, but about the importance of being mindful of our own substance use, despite, you know, the cool factor, despite the peer pressure that we may be under. With this book, how have you found people have responded to you in terms of their own experiences?
Well, because I'm so open and transparent about my journey, because I also, even because my father was an alcoholic, my mom had a younger brother, which was 10 years older than I was. She asked him, I need you to be a part of my son's life. So in the absence of my father, I had an uncle that stepped in as that father figure. And I talk about this in my book. And I was 14 at that time. So I was also a teenager. This uncle of mine taught me how to drive. He taught me how to paint cars. He tried to show me how to play guitar. He showed me how to drive a semi truck, because he was like my first mentor before I even knew what a mentor was. So it's important that every teenager, in the absence of a parent, needs to have somebody there to guide them through life, whether it be an older brother, an uncle, a cousin, a neighbor, a pastor. But somebody has to guide our youth so they don't get lost in the streets.
So important. Now, you also talk about having a disability, which I think is a really beautiful topic to talk about, because not only do we have a bunch of differently abled humans, teenagers, in the country, but also a lot of people who look at differently abled people and immediately jump to conclusions about who they are, what they are, and what their limitations, perceived limitations, I should say, are, especially when those disabilities are invisible, like yourself and like myself. Can you take me back to what happened to you a few years back when you developed a disability?
So when I was 39 years old, I had a slip and fall in the company that I used to work for, and I herniated a disc in my lower spine, one in my mid spine, and one in my neck, and that disabled me for about 3.5 years. 2.5 years of that, I was heavily medicated, I was depressed, and I had suicidal thoughts. This is the consequences of any kind of drug, whether it be medication or substance. That's the consequence of that, and I was able to pull myself out of there. And I remember people used to see me that I was depressed and I looked a little off because I was medicated. But what they didn't see when I got off the medication, they thought I was fine. They thought I had no pain, I had no struggles, I wasn't dealing with anything. It's almost like if I was making it up. But they didn't see the pain that I had to be stronger than that pain, because I didn't want to be in that medication. So I started doing like stretching and yoga and core strengthening and whatnot, and herbals, teas, and herbal things and whatnot to eliminate the inflammation that was causing these issues. But people literally think that, yeah, he's fine. There's nothing wrong with him, because, like you said, it's invisible to them. They don't see it. Only we feel that physical pain.
So how do you navigate that, or how do you help the young people that you work with navigate that when they are differently abled?
Well, I tell people that there's no one going to understand your journey other than you. No one feels your pain, and they're not going to feel it. They can only imagine what the pain feels like. It's not until they go through similar pains, and then they're going to say, "Oh my God, now I know what George is going through." Because that's exactly what happened to me. A couple of years after I was hurt and I was, getting my back on my feet, I had family members that had back issues and had sciatica nerve issues and whatnot, and they would say, "Well, is this what George is going through? Because I look fine. I look at myself in the mirror, I look fine. Is this what he's going through?" I mean, they don't need to apologize to me, but now they understand the fact as, yeah, we may look normal, but only we know the pain that we're going through. And I think we need to be like sensitive of other people's feelings and what they're going through, because we have no idea of what they're covering through that smile or that laugh or the enjoyment that they're trying to give the world. Because I don't want anyone to see and feel that I'm suffering, because then that'll make them suffer or get worried about me. So we hold a strong face. So we have to be sensitive to that about people.
For sure. I mean, I would never wish on anybody, not even my enemies, to have the kind of disability that, well, I say the kind of disability. I struggle personally to use the word disability to associate with myself, because, I'm perfectly abled. I can run, jump, high five, do all of the things. It just happens that I, fun fact, have had 10 brain surgeries, and but I wouldn't wish that upon anybody, not even my worst enemies. And so, when it comes to navigating that terrain, when it comes to expressing my truth and expressing, what that feeling is like for people, or to people rather. I think it's really, it almost makes them feel uncomfortable, and I would never want them to feel uncomfortable, right? And it certainly doesn't make me feel better when they're feeling uncomfortable. So I'm curious, if you're working with a young person who is trying to navigate their own limitations, what does that look like for through the lens of George V. Gonzalez's coaching?
Well, what I like to do is I like to share with them every part of me, the vulnerable parts, the dark parts, because I want them to see that I'm vulnerable with them, and that I want them also to feel that they're not on this journey on their own. There's a lot of us that are going through similar things, some of us that might already surpass that particular part of our lives, but we're also still dealing with certain things. And when I'm able to do that and I'm able to open up myself and be vulnerable to them, then they know they can trust me, because now we have relatable experiences. I'm not telling you, oh my God, I can only imagine what you're going through. No, I know what you're going through because I already went through that too, or I'm exiting that. And we got to be able to connect with them on that much personal level.
I love that because I think you're completely right. Vulnerability is the key to everything. And especially when it comes to young people, because it's so often we speak to our young people and they're like, oh, nobody understands this. I'm all alone here in this drowning in misery. And that's a really scary place for a young person to be in, whether they've had their heart broken for the first time or whether their families, their parents are getting divorced. The loneliness is such a huge component to the well-being and the development of a young person. So I love that you reach out and connect with them on that vulnerable level. When it comes to okay, so let's say that you've talked to them, they now realize that they're not necessarily alone, but they're still struggling with their emotional overwhelm. What does that mean for you and the work that you do when it comes to being vulnerable or when it comes to helping them overcome, well, not helping them overcome, but helping them to be okay with who they are.
You know, I'm gonna, on a more personal level,
Please.
the way I raised my daughter is I wanted to make sure that I knew what makes my daughter happy and what makes her sad. What are her likes and dislikes? Now, our children, the kids, the next generation, they think differently than we are. Their needs are much different than ours. So we have to raise our children and maneuver our children in such a way where it needs to be their decision, not our decision, because it's their life. The outcome at that very end is not going to be ours, it's going to be theirs. So we have to take a step back and ask the question, where are your happiest moments? What does that look like? What makes you happy? Well, these things make me happy. Okay, great. Which are the moments where it makes you like disappointed, that maybe a little upset, that you don't like, while these moments don't? And then you get a really understanding of this person's, not only their attitude, their personality, and you have to speak to them in such a way where you trigger the good things and not trigger the bad things. Because if you keep triggering the bad things, they're going to be explosions.
Of
If you
course.
keep triggering the good things, you're going to see happiness, laughter, enjoyment, fulfillment. And then they're going to want to have conversations with you. And then they're going to want to go with you to the store. Simple things. If you upset
I,
them, they're not going to want to go to the store with you if you upset
of
them.
course not. No, that's true. That is completely true. I love that you brought up how this generation's very different to the previous generation. With the global mental health crisis, as it is especially affecting Gen Z, I feel as if there has been a shift in the things that make Gen Z happy. And a lot of the time, there is a lot of cross over, but there isn't necessarily that conversation about the similarities between generations, if that makes sense. So, you talked at the very beginning of our conversation about the importance of getting outside and getting some vitamin D and digging your toes into the sand or in the dirt or whatever it is that you're doing. And this, Gen Z, even millennials, are much more willing to go outside and stay on their phones. So how does that sort of impact the work that you're doing?
The global, like you said, mental health issue in 2021 just exposed and broke a lot of people. 2021, with the pandemic, it made people realize and ask themselves, like, what am I really here? Am I really doing what I'm supposed to be doing? But they're lost because they can't figure it out. And when I'm having conversations, when I can see and hear that they're going through some things that could potentially be like mental issues, like you said. And the question is, what do you love to do? What are you good at? And if money was not an option, what would you want to do for the rest of your life? We have to bring out the things that makes them happy and the things that fulfill them. Because that, if you're in that stage, there is no negative stage if you're at that stage. Because when you're doing something that you're good at, you're happy. When you do something that you're passionate about, there is no troubles. The moment you figure out, I want to do this for the rest of my life, as money was not an option, now you have a target to hit and a target to go after. So if you don't have something that you're chasing, you're just there, just existing. But give somebody something to chase and they'll be happy chasing it.
I
This is
love that.
why, that's why a lot of people, when they succeed in certain levels, then they're looking for the next success and the next stage and the next stage and the next stage. Why? Because they're looking for that chase to make themselves happy and fulfilled.
I this reminds me of a quote that I heard years ago. It's like the success is not achieving the thing you wanted to achieve. Success is in the searching. It's in the seeking. I love that so much. And you hinted at something else that I want to dig a little bit deeper in. And that's around, giving our young people the opportunity and platform to really lean into the things that they're good at and the things that they love. I have found that, because I've been teaching in the youth workspace for 18 years now. Don't tell anybody. But, one of the things that I've seen change a little bit over the years has been our susceptibility to try to appease our peers as opposed to appease our own desires. Is there something that you do with your clients that helps them stay aligned with their mission or their happy space?
Something that's difficult for a lot of people is boundaries.
Ooh,
And
say them
something
again.
and boundaries are very difficult for a lot of people. And
I know. I love that. I just repeat that over and over again. Yes.
not only that, but self-love is also a big thing. So what does self-love look like? Self-love looks like me doing what makes me happy. Because if you're not happy that I'm happy, then you're really not happy for me. So I need to remove you from here then. Because your best intention should be what makes George happy? Because I want to see him happy. If you want to see me miserable and only you want to be happy, then we're having the wrong conversation here. We're around the wrong people. So I always tell people, okay, what makes you happy? Forget about everybody else. And sometimes it's about forget about the family too, because they don't know who you're supposed to become. Only you know that. So if you're supposed to, for instance, my daughter wanted to play softball when she was 12 years old. I signed her up because that's what wanted, she was happy doing that. Out of that happiness, I became an inventor, inventing a batting machine for baseball and softball for her. She became
That's
a
awesome.
five-time All-Star, 1 year rookie year, and 1 year MVP because I put her in the place where she wanted to be happy at. It raised up her creativity, her self-esteem and her confidence to such a level because I put her in the environment that she wanted to be at, not an environment that I wanted her to be at, the environment she wanted to be at. So I took a step back and let her be do her thing.
I love that.
That's
I
important.
love that. What if you have a young person who knows what they want to do, knows what makes them happy, but they're feeling fearful about that, or about stepping into that position?
Well, if we have somebody that's young, that's looking to get into a certain field or do something that they want to do that they're really passionate about, it's our obligation and our duty to facilitate that. As a parent, as an uncle, as a grandparent, whatever the case may be, they look for us for guidance. And if they opened up to us about this passion of theirs that they want to do, the least we can do is stay engaged with them because we should be humble that they share that with us. So what do I need to do? Can I help them get into a certain class? So I ha can I help them by calling a certain individual to make a certain connection or whatnot? How can we help them? How can we serve them so they can stay in that happy place that they want to pursue now?
I love that mostly because, well, I mean, obviously, every generation then turns into the older generation that we pour down. But one of the things that you're reminding me of again is how this isn't just for teenagers. Like, happiness is something that we lose no matter how old we are. And especially for parents who are watching this right now, I think a lot of parents kind of put their happiness or their childhood dreams on the back burner in for whatever reason, for their career, for their parents' approval, for their whatever. And so we end up putting so much pressure on our young people to do the same thing, right? How can we, navigate that space for parents so that they can raise a happier, healthier next generation?
You said it right. We put that pressure on our children for them to sacrifice themselves for us when it should be the other way around. We should be making sacrifices for them. We brought them into this world. They're the next generation. They're going to make decisions for us. So we better educate them and motivate them in such a way where they still want to take care of us, because we're still around, right? So our obligation is us to them, not them to us. And I think we need to understand that we are going to either advance them and project them to a certain direction, or we're going to damage them in such a way where they're just going to be just here and that's it. So we have to make sure that we sacrifice ourselves for them and put them in position, give them the tools that are necessary and the guidance that's needed for them to do what they're meant to do. Which is the next generation is, like I said, they're going to be making decisions for us.
Such important work we're doing, George. Thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate you coming and talking about your book, your story, your journey as you have used your adverse experiences to help other people recognize that they too can answer the call. We don't need to stay married to our trauma. We can overcome it and actually turn it into a superpower if we want to, which is beautiful. If people want to get in touch with you, obviously it's georgevgonzalez.com, but they can also grab a copy of your best-selling book. Do you have anything else that you would like to share with the audience before we take off for today?
I just want to close by saying that we need to allow our next generation, our youth and our teenagers, for them to become who they are meant to become and not the image that we think that they're supposed to become. And I think we do them a huge disservice because we were all given a gift, a talent, and a life's purpose. And it's only that individual that knows what their true calling is. I don't know what the calling of my daughter's life is. Only she knows that. So I cannot interfere with her calling, just like I can't let anybody else interfere with my calling. So that's how we really help out the next generation.
I love that. I love that. Thank you so much, George. Thank you, everybody who's tuned in tonight. Until next time, be good, be kind, have a great holiday celebration, however you celebrate. And if it was Hanukkah, then happy Hanukkah for last Friday. Until next time, friends, be good, be kind, spread love like it's going out of fashion. And don't forget to take some time to reconnect with your teenager.